This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idstey in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Tune in your favorite talk radio show, like Talk of the Nation, and inevitably, it seems, the first few callers are men. Turn to the editorial page of your local newspaper, and the majority of columns, written by men. On television, the bulk of the pundits, again, it's a pretty male group. It's not only that, how many meetings have you sat through where men seem to speak up more with their opinions, while their female counterparts often seem to sit on the sidelines, not offering their opinions? Why are the voices of opinion slanted towards the masculine? Is it an innate difference in how men and women form their views and express them? Or does our culture make it harder for women to find their voice? Are women rewarded or punished for being outspoken? We would like to hear from you on these questions, especially the women in our audience. Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now in the studio is Sophia Smarts, assistant editor of the Outlook section of the Washington Post. In her recent opinion piece, she addressed the issue of why men make up the vast majority of columnists and contributors to op-ed pages of large newspapers. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Now, you did an informal survey to see how many editorials you had submitted from women
right.
and from men. And tell
right.
us what you found.
I went through our slush pile. It's very informal and totally unscientific survey, but I counted over the previous 7 days from the day that I was counting how many of the unsolicited manuscripts that had come into the Outlook section were from men and how many were from women. And it was, I ended up with a 7-to-1 ratio, men to women.
And let's talk about what prompted you to do that. There's been a bit of a spat going on in editorial circles.
There has been. There's what I call a little kerfuffle going on in opinion land. And it started out in the West Coast with a spat between Susan Estrich, who's a well-known lawyer and women's activist, and Michael Kinsley, the editor of the Los Angeles Times opinion and editorial pages. And Ms. Estrich was very upset that there are so few women columnists on op-ed pages across the country. She has a point. There mm-hmm. are very few. And the discussion broadened from there, and until at one point, Gail Collins, who is the female editor of the New York Times opinion page, editorial page, ventured the opinion that women just aren't as comfortable batting out opinion mm-hmm. on the news.
Well, you had some theories as well in your column that I found very interesting. Tell us
right.
about them.
Well, that comment, which then caused another wider dust-up, got me thinking. It reminded me of a book I had ghostwritten with a neuropsychiatrist a number of years ago, in which she described the differences between the male and female brain mm-hmm. and how men are wired and how women are wired, men being more left brain-oriented and women more likely to use both sides of their brain. And the upshot of this is that the left brain, which is dominant, makes men more assertive, while women are more cautious, more careful, because they're also thinking with the right brain, which is the more cautious side of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Now, this gets us into very delicate territory.
And
Larry
I know
Summers,
it does.
President of Harvard, got in some real trouble talking about these things.
I know, and I'm not here to defend any of that science because I don't know enough about it. But what happened to me was that it struck me that this description she'd given me of the brain, which, by the way, is based on mounds of research. I mean, she was a scientist. She had her research down. Just seemed to dovetail so well with what I experience looking for women to write for the opinion pages mm-hmm. of the Post.
Now, you also developed a very nice metaphor or analogy, I guess, for explaining this. And
right. Well, that was the neuropsychiatrist's metaphor. She described it as a man having a quiver full of arrows and spying a target and then just letting loose with the entire quiver. Most of the arrows will miss the bullseye, but one will make it. You know, they've done it fast. It's gotten in there. People remember the bullseye. They forget all the misses. Whereas a woman will survey the scene, look very carefully, measure the distance, the likelihood of hitting the target, and then she'll send out one arrow. And more often than not, it hits the bullseye. But by then, you know, she's
the moment has passed.
She's in the dust,
yeah,
yes.
And especially in newspapers, editorial pages, talk shows, you have to shoot from the hip to get your opinion.
More often than not, because you're reacting to the news.
Yeah.
That's true.
Now, let me ask you about, do you find this in real life? I mean, when you talk to women and you talk to men, do you find them operating in this way?
Well, that's a dangerous question. But I'd venture to say, in my experience, yeah, for the most part, men are very quick with their opinions, which is not to say they're more opinionated than women. Women are extremely opinionated. But they tend to formulate their opinions more carefully, I think, more slowly, want to provide more evidence, so forth.
Let's have another guest join in the discussion. Virginia Vallian is Distinguished Professor of Psychology at Hunter College in New York City, I guess. That's where Hunter is, isn't it? Professor Vallian, are you there?
Yes.
And a writer for Outlook, I might add.
Oh, you
That's
are?
That's right.
Ah, so the two of you know each other.
Well, I didn't work with Virginia, but I know she wrote for a piece for us not long ago.
Professor, you've studied the differences between how men and women express their opinions. Would you agree with Ms. Smarts on her description of why?
I'd agree with her description of that, but not with her description of why. So I think it's definitely the case, and we see it at every colloquium that we go to, every talk we go to, every set of people who call in to talk shows, that men are much more numerous and they speak at much greater length than women do. So I think that Ms. Smart's column was beautifully written, very funny. I really enjoyed reading it. And I thought she nailed the phenomenon beautifully. But then the question is, well, why is this happening? And to what extent should we attribute those differences to differences in the reactions that men and women get when they let fly with an opinion, and to what degree should we attribute them to brain differences between males and females?
And have you looked at that, at how men and women get different responses to opinion?
That's something there's at least a limited amount of data on. What we know is that women are judged much more harshly, if you will, than men are. So men who come out with an opinion, even if that opinion turns out to be full of holes, are not judged as negatively for having done so as women are. So one reason that women are more cautious about expressing their opinions is that they need to be. They'll be penalized more if they make a mistake. There's another thing that goes into this, which women in your audience may themselves have experienced. You raise your hand. You're a woman. You raise your hand. And they don't call on you. They call on somebody else. So, okay, then you raise your hand again. And they don't call on you again. They call on somebody else. So, okay, you raise your hand again. Because you really want to be heard. But this time, you're starting to feel a little ridiculous and feeling that you've got a flat learning curve since you keep being ignored when you raise your hand. And then finally, you're called on. And you've got a whole set of questions you want to ask, a suite of questions. And that's what the men before you have done. And you get out question one, which is your build-up question. And then the person who's called on you answers it quickly and then moves on to somebody else. So you don't even have the same opportunity for airtime if you're a woman that you have when you're a man.
Well, let's get some of our women listeners involved in this discussion. Jackie in West Haven, Connecticut. Jackie, you're on the air. Welcome to
Hi.
Talk of the Nation.
How are you?
Fine. You've got a question or a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I've had similar experiences. One place is where I work, and I'm very vocal about diversity and bringing diversity to this. I work at a school, at the school campus. And on the email, we always get emails telling us who the new hires are. And they're always white men in these high positions, such as the dean or even just a faculty position. And so once I emailed everyone and said, you know, I would hope that we can try to focus on bringing some diversity to this campus really soon, because I think the students deserve that. And I was told by many male faculty members that I was out of line. I was told that I wasn't properly grounded upon entering the university, meaning that I don't have any rights. And this is something I've experienced on a you know, consistent basis.
And you think a similar thing wouldn't have happened to a man who offered this opinion?
Definitely not.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Professor Vallian?
Of course, it's always hard to say about any individual case. And and so we can't be certain, but what we can say about the caller's experience is that it's par for the course and something that we'd expect on the basis of what I've called gender schemas, that is, our ideas about what men are like and what women are like. So we see men as professionally competent. They're capable of independent action. They do things for a reason. They get down to the business at hand. All of that makes them look like people whose opinions should be listened to. We see women as nurturant, caring about other people, expressive. All of that makes them look like people whose opinions in a professional setting are worth less. And both males and females have these gender schemas, I should add, and are equally likely to negatively evaluate women compared to men.
Sophia Smarts, do you think you treat women or men any differently when they offer you columns for the newspaper, for the Washington Post?
Absolutely not. We're not a business that looks at women as particularly nurturing or men as particularly, you know, go get them and out there with all the smart ideas. We're looking for people who have great ideas, powerful ideas, who are good thinkers and who can write and express their opinion, and it doesn't matter whether they're male or female.
We're talking about the voices that form public opinion and why so few of them are female. Is it a lack of opportunities or a lack of interest? What do you think? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. You can send us an email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm John Idsty. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idsty in Washington. We're talking about the different ways in which men and women express themselves in the sphere of public opinion. What have you observed about the different ways men and women give their opinions? We want to hear from you, especially if you can illustrate that thought with a good anecdote. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're joined now by from her home in Texas by syndicated political columnist Molly Ivins. Welcome, Ms. Ivins.
Hi. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you here. So I presume that you're familiar with this debate.
Yes, I am.
What are your thoughts? Why are there a dearth of women on op-ed pages, on talk shows? Why do women's opinions seem to be valued less or get less play?
Well, I think you've got separate problems in print and broadcast media. I think part of it, of course, is just plain old discrimination and the effects of residual effects of many years of discrimination. But women are more and more common in the newsroom and as editors. Normally, a political column is given to the best political reporter of his or her generation on a newspaper. That was true for a long time. But now columnists are taken more and more, as are many opinion makers, plucked straight off the front lines of partisan political warfare, so that you get people like Mary Madeline and James Carville. You get Henry Kissinger writing a column, Linda Chavez writing a column. These people are not reporters. Mm-hmm. They're not journalists. And when you look around, you'll find terrific women political reporters absolutely everywhere. I mean, think of Christy Hoppe at the Dallas Morning News, Virginia Ellis, L.A. Times. I mean, some of the best political reporters in the country are women. But they're not celebrities. Mm-hmm. And it is celebrities that are now writing opinion columns, not journalists.
So just, just at the moment when women have become the senior journalists in the newsroom, the climate has changed and wind is blowing toward all these celebrities.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. There's another problem, I think, on the gong shows on television. Women are, as we all know, I think, I'm not going to get into trouble for making this generalization, by and large better listeners than men, and rather reluctant to get involved in nasty shouting matches, which seems to be what some of the gong shows really like.
Mm-hmm. So is it sexism or just this lack of a killer instinct?
Oh, I think that's silly. There are opinionated women all over this country.
Well,
there are, but
certainly nothing inherently unopinionated about women.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about yourself. You're certainly considered one of the most opinionated women in the country. Did it come naturally for you?
Oh, sure. Well, mm-hmm. I was a political reporter for many years, mm-hmm. and. So when I started writing a column, I wrote about politics, and my idea of a column is that it should be informative. It should contain information that's helpful to people as they think about an issue. Obviously, I love funny stuff, and I always try to stick some in, but to just do an amusing column, it seems to me, is not particularly helpful. You really need to do some reporting as a columnist, and that, of course, is becoming rare.
Mm-hmm. What kind of response did you get to your outspokenness in the beginning, for instance, and what kind of response do you get now?
Well, I started writing the column in Dallas, Texas, and which is notoriously conservative. And it was amazing how many people would come up to me and say, "Oh, you're so brave. You have so much courage to say that." And I said, "Well, you know, if you agree with me, you could say it out loud, too." I mean, sometimes people are very hesitant to say what they really think until they hear it from someone in the media. Then it's kind of like okay to say it.
Is it okay for you to say it now? I mean, do you get any flack for being...
Oh, I get flack all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not over being a female.
Mm-hmm.
When you write about abortion, gun control, almost anything, you're going to get hate mail.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for joining us, Molly Ivins.
Okay.
Molly Ivins is a nationally syndicated political columnist. Her latest book is Who Let the Dogs Out? Incredible Political Animals I Have Known. She joined us from her home in Austin, Texas. And still with us are Professor Vivian
Virginia Valian,
Distinguished Professor of Psychology and Linguistics at the City University of New York, Hunter College in New York City, and Sophia Smarts, who's the Assistant Editor of the Outlook section of the Washington Post. Professor Valian, it sounded like you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to something that Ms. Smart said earlier, because it's something that we all say because we hope it's true, namely that it doesn't matter whether somebody is male or female. We're just looking for the best person to do the job. We're just looking for good opinions. And that's true at a conscious level. And that's why psychologists have done so many experiments to look at subtle measures of implicit bias, where they show that you and I, despite our good intentions, nevertheless tend to judge males more favorably than we judge females in a variety of ways. A lot of this is in my book, Why So Slow? The Advancement of Women. There's also on the web a nice demonstration in which you investigate whether you think that women are as good at being scientists as men are. And even if you believe consciously that that's the case, one thing that you see when you take this experiment, which Mahzarin Banaji and her colleagues have developed, is that you're much faster to link men with science than you are to link women with science. And in a variety of experiments, there are no differences between males and females, and also no differences as a function of what people's beliefs are. So all of us, with all of our good intentions, nevertheless use shifting standards in evaluating males and females.
I think I can say with certainty that we don't do that in the Outlook section. We get lousy men writers and we get lousy women writers, and you know,
and good ones too.
And good ones,
yeah,
as well.
Of each,
yes,
variety.
That's true.
Let's get a listener involved again. Lynn in Charleston, South Carolina. Lynn, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I'm not so sure about the physiology of women being active opinionators, but I do want to say that I think that men have more leisure time. I know at my house, at my house, you know, my husband is a contemporary man, and he helps out with all of the household chores and the finances, but ultimately it's my responsibility. And so I think that he has more time to write letters to the editor or attend town hall meetings and things like that.
Let's ask Sylvia Smarts whether or not she experiences that when she talks to women.
I absolutely hear those things when I talk to women. Hmm. I'll call a woman with an idea for a piece, and she's an expert in her field, and she'd be perfect. I know I have a long conversation with her. She'll tell me great things. She has great ideas, strong opinions. I figure she can write like that, and she'll just bat something out. But very often, when the crucial moment comes and I say, can you have something to me in 2 days, there are all sorts of excuses that crop up. You know, if she's a professor, she has faculty meetings. She's got, you know, her husband's out of town. She's got to take the kids to soccer practice. She's got to do this. She's got to do that. And I hear all those excuses, and I know those excuses. I've used them myself. And sometimes they're not excuses. Sometimes you really just don't have enough time. But often, I think women will use those little excuses to hide behind so that they don't have to do it.
We want to get your ideas or anecdotes as well. Give us a call at 1-800-989-TALK, 1-800-989-8255. Ms. Smarts, what would you say characterizes the women who do end up on the editorial page? Is there anything different about them from the women who don't?
No.
They have more
sometimes
time.
Sometimes it's serendipity. You know, it's just they have time. There are also women, I mean, I'm not trying to generalize absolutely on either side. There are women who are willing and able to take a leap and do it, and, you know, do it quickly and do it well. There are others who sometimes give women more time to do things, and they end up on the editorial. And not just women, we give men more time too. I'm not trying to say it's purely a male-female thing in that regard, but you know, on the whole, I just feel it's harder to coax women onto the page than it is men.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Rebecca in Charlevoix, Michigan. Hello, Rebecca. You're on the air.
Hi.
Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm one of the opinionated women out there.
Well, good.
But this is my first time I've ever called into your show. And I think, as your first speaker said, that women feel like they need to know all the facts. At least that's how I feel, that I have to be almost an expert on the subject before I'll be willing to talk on it. And I think a lot of men will just can go out and, as you say, shoot from the hip. They kind of can wing it. And I speak in public on some controversial issues, and I feel that, I'm in my mid-30s, but I look younger, that I have to be super prepared, or else I'll be seen as maybe someone who's less experienced. And in that part.
Have you experienced being shot down? Have you stood up, given your opinion, and been ignored?
Well, I've stood up and given my opinion and been shot down.
Mm-hmm.
and it was in a political kind of a meeting, and it was people of the same political party that I was, and I was shot down on an issue. So I think that people are hesitant, and for a reason. But I do think that women are maybe wired differently. And what I find strange about all of this is women generally develop language skills much earlier, and maybe verbal skills earlier than boys do. So where does this happen where women maybe are less expressive later on in life, and maybe that's more of a cultural thing?
Let's ask Professor Valian what she thinks.
There are very few sex differences in verbal ability. Girls do start slightly earlier, but boys catch up very fast. The main place where there are differences in high school is that girls' writing ability far outstrips boys. So they're much, much better writers. Nevertheless, as we've been discussing, males are certainly overrepresented on the editorial pages of our country's newspapers. I think we can't underestimate the extent to which we have higher standards for women's performance than we do for men's.
So do women just have higher standards in themselves?
They have higher standards in themselves, I think that's right, but they partly have it because other people have higher standards for them and penalize them when they don't produce in a way that they don't penalize men. So a woman who writes a lousy column, you were speaking earlier about mm-hmm. lousy columns, mm-hmm. a woman who writes a lousy column, that looks like that's what she is, a lousy writer. A man who writes a lousy column, he writes it once, he's not penalized forever. And women, I think, are rational, just as men are, and they adjust to what the contingencies are. Men know that if they hit the target once with their entire quiverful, that's going to be okay. Women know that if they shoot a whole lot of arrows that don't reach the target, people are going to pay attention to all of those misses.
Well, I'd just like to say that, if I get a lousy column from a man and I reject it, within a week or a month, I'll have 9 or 10 more columns from that man.
By that
but
same
the,
man.
But mm-hmm. the woman, if I mm-hmm. reject a lousy column from a woman, I will hear from her, in 6 months or a year's time, if ever again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and I notice this. I mean, this is a pattern I notice.
But it doesn't sound to me like you're disagreeing here.
Well, I think we're partly disagreeing about where the burden of proof is, mm-hmm. if you will. So I agree women are hit harder by these rejections than men are, but I think we can't lose sight of the lifetime they have of getting more of those rejections and having to fight harder to be heard at all.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to a male caller, Joe in Novi, Michigan. Hello, Joe. Novi, yes. I guess it is.
Yes.
Hi, Joe. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My story is just recently I work in a small legal clinic with both male and female colleagues, and a couple of my colleagues, two men and two women, got involved in what you might call playful banter about the differences between the sexes. I was a little bit offended, and I stayed back because I expected the two younger women to jump in because they're law students, they're educated, they both have experience in their backgrounds of other work, and I thought, all right, these are the type of women who are going to jump in and defend themselves, and they didn't. And I was shocked, and eventually I stepped in because, I have a mother and I have a wife, and I feel like, if somebody is picking on that sex in general or just being an idiot, that I should step up and defend them. But I was also a little bit shocked that these two women didn't do the same. They just sort of sat there and chuckled and laughed and, said, oh, yeah, sure, that's funny, whatever. Hmm. And I don't understand why even educated women don't feel it necessary to defend themselves sometimes.
Let's ask our guests, is it changing at all? Are younger women who are better educated and have been discriminated against a little bit less, are they more aggressive, do you think, Professor Valian?
I think there has been a change and that younger women are more assertive and that younger men are more appreciative of those assertions when they hear them than used to be the case, and that's a real plus. I think it's also the case that younger women have a big stake in not perceiving whatever implicit or explicit bias might be there. And so one reason that your caller might have had the experience that he did is that most women don't want to think that there's a problem.
Just quickly, Sophia Smarts, any difference between young and old women?
I don't really see that much of a difference with younger women being more ready or more willing to take the leap. But I do make an effort to solicit younger women and get younger voices as well as female voices.
When we come back from a short break, we'll finish up our discussion of women in public opinion. Also, an attempt to grow coffee with a Made in America label, and we remember the passing of a controversial black intellectual. I'm John Itzty. It's Talk of the Nation. From NPR News. Today, we're talking about women's voices in the realm of public opinion. Join in the conversation. Call us at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And our guests today are Sophia Smarts, assistant editor for the Outlook section of The Washington Post, and Virginia Vallian, distinguished professor of psychology and linguistics at the City University of New York, Hunter College. Thanks to both of you for being here today. Let's go to an email. This from Shaka in Boston. She says, I would say that men are more inclined to shoot from the hip because of dating. It's a performance thing. To impress women, whether men know the information or not, men must look knowledgeable. And this hardwiring behavior spills into everything else we do. What do you think? Professor, what do you think?
Possible. I don't know of any data.
It sounds like the arrows to me.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Here's another email from this one from Sharla in Paradise, California. Expressing strong opinion requires a certain amount of passion, and when women display this level of emotional investment in their expressions of opinion, they run the risk of being called hysterical. As a result, I think they often self-edit before expressing themselves. Just imagine a woman giving Jimmy Stewart's speech in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Well, she has a point, I guess.
She does. I do think I find when women write for me for the Outlook section that very often they are at first more timid about expressing a very clear-cut opinion in print. You have to sort of coax it out of them and sort of force them into a corner a bit and say, no, you really have to be clear about what your view is, because we're an opinion page and we want an opinion, not an analysis. And that is hard for some women to do, but it's also hard for some men to do. Some men don't want to really come down on one side or the other of an issue either.
Professor Vallian, do you think that's part of the discrimination and stereotyping that women have felt, that when they offer an opinion very forcefully, they're called hysterical?
Well, we did have a recent example of just that, and with people's reaction to Professor Hopkins at MIT when she responded to Mr. Summers's talk at the event that set all of us off on all of these articles and talk shows and so on. So women are certainly at risk of being called hysterical whenever they express a strong opinion. And the emotion that men show, namely anger, isn't usually even classified as emotion. So there does seem to be a real difference in how we react to strong emotion when it's expressed by males and females.
Let's go to another caller, Jessica in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Jessica. You've been very patient. You were actually the first caller today.
Oh,
very
well,
uncharacteristic.
I'm so opinionated.
And you've had time to form your opinion, I guess.
Yes. Over and over.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us what's
about
on your mind.
About to be perfect now.
Well, my comment goes back to something you said at the very beginning of the show, that there's this idea that little girls are, there's this sort of theory that little girls are not taught to be aggressive. And I've always been very opinionated. I've always been very outspoken, even as a little girl. And that has helped me in one sense, in that in my professional life, I'm now a graduate student in the sciences. In my professional life, that's worked really well for me. I've been, because I have sort of these, what would be considered a masculine trait, you know, I can just sort of yell out answers in class, and I get that same attention, and so we've been successful in that sense. Unfortunately, where being opinionated for me has been sort of a problem is more in my personal life, where any time you're outspoken or aggressive or show that sort of tendency, I think that really intimidates men, even my age, who are, you know, supposed to be, and in a lot of ways, very contemporary and very updated. Men in their early 30s are still very intimidated by, I find, on a personal level, by women that are very outspoken and very opinionated.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of have this half and half. It's worked for me in some ways, but not worked for me in others.
Professor Vallian, is that sort of true to form, do you think?
Again, I don't know of data on that, so what I'd have to offer would be anecdotal, and I would just advise the caller to hang on. There are men who like assertive women and find that a turn on, and they're out there, and I hope that you run into some.
Thanks a lot, Jessica.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For both of our guests, how do we change this? Are you doing anything, Sophia Smarts, at the Washington Post to actively try to change this?
Well, I wrote this article, and it's
it's
inundated me. It's inundated me with submissions from women and men, unfortunately. But the men are in there, too. But, you know, I said in the piece, I'm not sure whether we need to change it. I think this tendency of women to think, to be careful doesn't necessarily have to be seen as something inferior or a flaw or a failing. It can be a strength. I mean, it means that they probably will do really well once they let that arrow fly.
Maybe we should change men to be more
thoughtful.
Well,
maybe,
huh?
You know, maybe, or just sort of change the pace of the way we do things. I don't have a solution or an answer. I thought it would be interesting for people to be aware.
Professor Vallian, what about you?
At Hunter, we're embarked on a number of initiatives, one of which is via some workshops that we have talking about reactions to rejection. So one of the things we would like to increase is women's resilience in the face of rejection and willingness to keep reapplying for turned down grants and papers and op-ed pieces and so on, and to understand more what is involved in rejection. But the other side of that, which Ms. Smarts alluded to, is that the way women are doing things, namely wanting to have a lot of evidence for what they say, is a good way to do things. And always having men as the norm and expecting women to do what men do isn't the way we should be structuring our society in general.
Well, thank you both very much for coming in to discuss this today. Virginia Vallian is a distinguished professor of psychology and linguistics at the City University of New York Hunter College in New York City. And Sophia Smarts is assistant editor of the Outlook section at the Washington Post. Thanks again.